meditation isn't about going to this beautiful, relaxing, blissed out state. Yeah, you might have essences and elements of that within your meditation, but don't ever expect to be, you know, that's what you're working towards. Really, you're working towards, especially with a practice like mindfulness, which is, you know, a present moment awareness, and you're bringing a gentle curiosity to it. It's a very, very simple and actually one of the most studied forms of meditation is mindfulness. And I would say that's probably a really, really good one to start with.
What's up, my friend? My name is Ted Rice, and today I'm coming to you from Bali, Indonesia. And I'm super excited to share this episode with you today because it's all about meditation. I have Simone Tai, who is a former television producer turned meditation teacher. And we're going to dive deep into meditation today. And I'll tell you more about that in a second. But before we jump into that, I want to say, if you've been listening to the show for a while and you've been enjoying this show, please share this show with a friend or with someone who could benefit from it, especially if they're interested in today's topic, which is meditation. And if you're new to this show and you're not sure what you've gotten yourself into, this show is all about upgrading your mind and body. So if you're looking to make a breakthrough in your health and level up your life, you're in the right place. So make sure you hit that subscribe button wherever you listen to podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you listen, there's so many places. Hit that subscribe button so every time one of my episodes goes live, you'll be the first to know. So back to the episode, back to meditation. What I really like about Simone is that she comes from this high-performance world of television producing. As you can imagine, there's so much pressure, and you're going to hear about the behind the scenes of what goes on for a television producer and how that job and the stress in it led her into learning how to meditate and eventually becoming a meditation teacher and leaving that job behind, leaving that career behind. You're also going to hear about Simone's struggle with eating disorders and how she was suffering from stress eating and compulsive eating and basically running on chocolate and coffee to power through her days as a television producer, and how meditation was the cure she was looking for, was that thing. And she's very knowledgeable about health and fitness, her and her husband. I met them both at Rhythmia in Costa Rica. And very knowledgeable, very fit people. But for Simone, it wasn't until she learned about mindful eating and until she was able to get a handle on that. And you're going to hear about what mindful eating is and just about meditation in general and how to get started on it. And we're not going to talk using flowery language about enlightenment or chakras or anything about that. We're going to talk about the science and the real world benefits and stories about how meditation has affected our lives personally. Yes, I even chime in and share a few stories myself. So you're gonna learn a lot. I'm super excited to present this episode to you today. So without further ado, let's step into this interview with Simone Tai about the power of meditation. Simone Tai, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Hi, Ted. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, especially because we're connecting again. And I think it might be kind of fun to talk about how we met.
Yeah, it's been a little while. I know that we met under very unusual circumstances. It's funny because I've actually met quite a few of my very close friends in this same scenario. And when people say, oh, how did you guys meet? You must have known each other for years and years. And I'm like, well, we met during a ceremony. We met in Costa Rica and they're just a bit like, what were you doing? Yes, we met partaking in a plant medicine ceremony in a beautiful retreat, one of the only medically licensed ayahuasca retreats facilities. And we met there last December, 2018.
Yeah, we closed out the year there. And what's so cool is that, you know, I've come to learn so much about you since then, but when you're at Rhythmia in a situation like that, nobody cares about what anybody does. Everybody's just going through the experience together, but come to find out that You're a television producer turned meditation teacher. And once I found that out, and that you teach meditation at one of the biggest, most popular places in LA, I had to get you on the show.
Oh, thank you. Yes, you're so right. It is one of those scenarios that the last thing that you care about or are interested in is the job, is the kind of the things that we label in our everyday life. And we go right to the crux of it. It's like, so tell me, you talk about the darkest, weirdest stuff that's ever happened to you. And then it's like later on, you go, oh, what is it you do for a living? It's the last thing that comes into your mind. But no, it's an amazing way to bond with somebody because it's the purest way.
Yeah. And just to piggyback on that a little bit, you don't have to go to Costa Rica and drink plant medicine. Yeah. You can go through an experience with other people doing all types of things, whitewater rafting, rock climbing, something that kind of puts you all together and makes you come together and where there's a challenge. Of course, you can do the ayahuasca thing too. And it's quite a challenge, but I think this is important because so many people try to network and grow their network and exchange business cards. And what I found, Simone, is that going to a place like that, not to turn this into a talk about Rythmia, but
yeah,
going to a place and going through this together, I've made such great friends that I still keep in contact with. And it wasn't because we exchanged business cards and started with, so what do you do?
Yeah, exactly. And you're right about there are other ways of doing it. I had the same experience doing my meditation teacher training. We, you know, the class that I was in, the group of people I was with, we were kind of, you know, not thrown into such a deep, emotionally raw scenario. But again, we were just kind of put together. We were learning together. The subjects that we talked about were like emotional and, you know, they were on a very, very deep, deep level, very fast. And it kind of just bypassed all the surface level stuff. And again, we formed really, really great bonds. But I don't know, there's something about, you know, we were on a rocket ship to the deepest depths of our beings. And like when you expose yourself so clearly like that to another human being and you don't care that you've been sick in front of them and you don't care that, you know, you've cried and you've told people the things that you feel most ashamed about, then it's like, okay, well, there's nothing else. You know, I've got nothing else to worry about here. We're friends.
Yeah. So it's such an amazing experience.
Yeah.
And with the, let's jump into it. So you have been a television producer for 15 years. You've worked on a number of different shows. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about what you were doing before as a producer and maybe some of the shows that you worked on that someone might recognize and how you transition and why you transition into teaching meditation?
Sure. So that's right. So I was mostly working in London for 12 years before I actually moved to Los Angeles. So most of the shows I did were the kind of the big UK primetime shows. I did my forte was the sort of live, I did studio shows. So anyone who's in the UK would recognize, I used to do a very popular date. It was a series producer of a dating show called Take Me Out. And that was a big studio and it's, you know, primetime Saturday night show and it was weekly. And it was a lot of fun, we had a comedy host. So there was a lot of, you know, laughter involved, but it was essentially a game show that was like a dating game show. So that was kind of one show that I worked a lot on. I used to do I did about 5 series and worked my way up from, you know, from a more junior role, and each season I came back and I progressed and I worked very, very hard, very fast pace. But I met some wonderful people doing that job. Other shows that people might recognize, I did a live telethon show called Comic Relief, which is, it's over here now as well. Richard Curtis, the man behind For Weddings and Funeral, it was his idea to create this telethon show to raise money and have lots of kind of comedy entertainment items and packages on the show. And ultimately, we were on air for 8 hours to raise as much money as possible for... It was for anywhere deserving, really. It was most originally African charities and people in absolute dire need. And then that spread throughout the UK and America. And then the show came out here a couple of years ago. And then since I moved to America, I have worked on shows like MasterChef with Gordon Ramsay. I wow. have done, yeah. That was a
he's
fun
a character, thing. That guy.
He's a
guy,
he sure is. He sure is a character.
Is he like that in person, screaming in people's faces, or is that... Can you share that?
That would be quite funny, wouldn't it? Right, yeah. I actually, when I first started the show, I was like, because you know, I've worked on many shows, and you hear stories about the host, and you know, even sometimes I've heard stories about someone who I thought would be really nice, and then behind the scenes they're actually not so nice. So I was kind of like, oh no, is he going to be shouting at me? Is he going to be? This isn't good enough. But actually, you know, he was really lovely. Very, very, I think that ultimately he's very passionate, very experienced. And sometimes that can come across as a bit abrasive. And I didn't take it that way. I've actually dealt with, you know, personalities who are a lot more difficult. so no, he was from, you know, for the experience I had with him, he was great.
Very cool. Mm. Well, and when I think about television, the business of television and all the things that you just talked about, I think of like, yeah, you said you met some great people, got to work with some interesting personalities, some interesting talent. But I also think like high stress levels, long hours, mm-hmm. incredibly high standards,
yep.
because you need to put something out. There's millions of dollars going into a show, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And so what were the steps or what got you to transition into meditation? Was it the stress of the job or what happened?
You know, yeah, so absolutely. It definitely, that was a huge factor for me. And one of the reasons I started to meditate in the first place, it was absolutely the hours I was doing. I worked on one show back in the day. This was, you probably heard the big, of the show Big Brother, it's over here as well.
When I
was story producing on that, we would do a 27-hour shift. So we would literally work around the clock following the stories of the house and making sure that we oversaw every single part of that day's story. But we had to physically be there for the 24 hours. And then there was plus a few because we had a viewing the next day. And I mean, we'd have a couple of days off, but I look back at that and now think, what on earth were we doing?
Oh my
gosh. Doing 27-hour shift. So yes, of course, you know, elements like that. We always do long hours when you're recording. So it absolutely did start to take its toll and it filtered through to all areas of my life. So I thought I was kind of, you know, coping with it, but things like emotional eating. So there would always be some, you know, chocolate on my desk. I would go through phases of, you know, it was like coffee and chocolate and just to keep myself going. And I just felt horrible, you know, a few days of that and you're not going to feel great, are you? So
absolutely not.
Yeah. And it would go through phases. And then the show would finish and you'd have a little break and then you'd be like, okay, I'm fine now. And then another show would start because I was freelance and then you'd get back into the same rhythm. So, you know, and I wasn't the only one. We were all in those kind of crazy hour situations. And yeah, the deadlines and the pressure, and it's like, we're not saving lives, but it felt like sometimes, you know, the quality that was expected and the pressure to make a really great quality show and the show that people would watch was felt all over. So yeah, that definitely was one of the reasons I first turned towards meditation, and I'd heard good things about it and friends had told me about it. And I would say that was really, you know, I started dabbling in and out. I'd try it for a bit. And then I'd go back to being busy. I was too busy to meditate, way too busy. And then I'd have a little bit of time, dabble in it again. And I definitely felt little effects, but I think ultimately I didn't quite know what I was doing. And I didn't quite know how to implement it as effectively as I could have.
That sounds like so many stories that I hear of people who they hear about meditation. I've talked to a lot of people who either become my clients or people who reach out to me from listening to the show. They're like, wow, I really like the idea of meditation, but every time I sit down to do it, I can't turn off my thoughts.
Yep.
I can't sit there. I can't focus. I get bored. I get anxious. And I want to do it. Or maybe they get into trying it like you did, Simone, and they do it for a while, but they fall off and they keep going on and off. And obviously, I mean, it's because they don't have the big breakthrough with meditation. For me, I did the same thing. The big breakthrough happened when I hurt my back really bad at the end of 2016. I herniated a disc in my lumbar spine. And I was in such incredible pain, more pain than I ever, I don't know, had in my whole entire life because it was nerve pain. There was just no way to turn it off or deal with it. And I couldn't sleep. I couldn't. So I was on the floor in my apartment because I couldn't lay in bed. The bed made my back even worse. And meditation was the thing that I turned to at like 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. And I did it and it got me back. It allowed me to get some sleep and it started to help me disconnect from my pain and not focus on it so much. So what I'd love to, and now I meditate every day, but I've gone through probably like you, of course not, I haven't done my 400 hour teacher training like you have, but I've gone through a journey where what I'm doing now is way different and way more beneficial than what I started doing with the Headspace app. So could you talk to someone about, talk to the person right now who's either struggling, they hear about meditation, but they get the Headspace app or Insight Timer or Waking Up with Sam Harris. They try it. They definitely feel a little bit of a difference, but it's nothing major and they keep going back and forth. What is that person missing? What would you tell them to do differently to start getting the benefits of meditation to the point where you're motivated to do it, I would imagine, every single day?
Right. Yeah, I think you're right. You know, when you, sometimes you mentioned it was a breakthrough moment for you, you kind of felt like you had no other choice. And often it happened for me as well. It was ultimately going through fertility treatments over many years. And it was more of an emotional, I kind of hit the emotional rock bottom. And so I think that often it does take something to happen for someone to feel motivated to do that. However, there is what the great thing about, there are all the research and studies that come out these days is that there is so much, I mean, you can go online, Google it. There's a ton of information about the significant benefits. So, you know, if you want to be productive at work and you're kind of like a high achiever and a goal setter, you know, you are probably more drawn to mindfulness or meditation because you're thinking, well, I want to be at my best and I want to be productive. I want to be creative. I want to have great focus. So that can often be the doorway in for a lot of people who are the high achievers. On the other hand, like I said, there's the, you know, people like me or yourself who hit the rock bottom and they really need to, they've got no other choice. And it's kind of like, I do not want to live like this anymore. And I don't want to feel like this anymore. So I really have to stick at something or try something for, you know, a certain amount of time, at least to see if that works for me. For those people who are, you know, just coming to it, interested in it and really just want to, you know, be as healthy and happy as they possibly can, then I would say to them, life is always an experiment. It's about trying. You've got to see it like a trial, an experiment. I have a lot of students and people come to me in my classes and they're kind of like, oh, I just find it so overwhelming. You know, do I have to sit here for 30 minutes every day? And do I have to sit cross-legged like a monk? And I'm just like, you know, those are the things that actually put me off in the beginning. And I just say to them, it's more important if you can develop a habit of it. So if you can take even just a few minutes a day, set your alarm clock a little bit earlier in the morning and build a habit of going into either a separate room or just taking a little bit of space and having that time just for yourself. And yes, you might not see anything happen in the beginning, but if you start to build a habit of it and maybe can extend it a little bit more to 5 minutes, what you might just start to notice, and it might just be little glimpses of it, a little bit of calm, a little bit of spaciousness. You might feel, especially when you can use the amazing apps that are out there with so many different styles, you can find meditations that not just only help with your focus awareness, training your awareness, but meditations that can also help with emotional problems, like things like gratitude meditation or loving kindness. You know, there's so many different styles out there. So I think it's really important to trial out, experiment with different styles and classes and see what resonates with you. And some teachers as well will also hit a nerve, and some will be kind of like, oh, I'm just not feeling that. I'm not into that style. I think that's what I would say.
Yeah, that's great advice. Treat it as an experiment. Make some time for yourself. And you may not notice that much at first because it takes practice. It's a meditation practice, isn't it? It's not something that happens. You know, you don't reach enlightenment.
No.
In a 10-minute meditation on Headspace.
Exactly. And, you know, I always say it's a very simple analogy, but it's like, it is the sort of going to the gym, it's going to the mind gym. You are not going to expect to have a muscle, an amazing bicep in just a few weeks of training. You are going to have to put that little bit of, well, maybe a lot of time in each day, just to build up that strength. And all you're doing with meditation is building an awareness strength. So for me, that helped a lot when I was kind of like, oh, so I'm building this strength. The more, you know, the kind of the dose, it's dose dependent. The more I invest in this, the more time I put into it, the more I'm going to start to get out of it in the long term. But you have to, you know, there is a bit of faith in there. But the great thing is, like I said, there's so many stats and research and science out there that you don't just have to have faith in it. Everyone says it's amazing, but you're your best teacher, and only when you do it yourself is when you'll start to see how it impacts you in your life.
Yeah, so well said. It's such an appropriate analogy using the gym, because you don't get into the gym, do a workout, and really see a difference. It takes a while.
Absolutely.
But you should feel a difference a little bit, right? I'll share just a couple of things, because you mentioned the science. A couple of things that really changed the game for me was I suffered from a lot of social anxiety, and I can't say I still do. It happens every once in a while if I drink too much coffee or something like that. But if I'm just normal, I don't have the anxiety levels, but I used to have so much anxiety that I'd have to drink alcohol, quite a bit of it, just to take the edge off. Now I don't do that at all. Part of that was learning communication skill, learning how to speak better and connect with people. But a big issue was my anxiety levels. And ever since I started meditating, I don't drink anymore. It's so weird. And we know that meditation actually changes your brain over time. It puts that prefrontal cortex in charge, that part of you that has your dreams, your goals, what you want to accomplish in your life. And it takes that fear part of your brain, your right amygdala, and just, it can actually make it smaller and less reactive. So you don't feel as much anxiety. You don't feel as much fear or any of those other negative emotions. And I think that's special. I want to get into this with you, Simone, because a lot of the people who come to work with me, they are high achievers, which means that they work really hard and are even harder on themselves psychologically. Like, oh, I'm such a loser. I got to do better than this. And I can hear the stress in their voice. And when they sign up and they're like, yeah, okay, yeah, let's do this. Let's get in shape, both the men and the women. And I'm like, oh, The first thing when I hear that, that tension, that stress, that, okay, I'm always on it. I'm always on top of things. I want to get them to meditate just to calm them down, because the issue is, how are you, you can't just follow a program and expect the program to work magic. You've got to make some internal shift. And I'd love for you to talk about your experience with meditation and the mindful eating and how it affected your experience with some of the eating disorders that you struggled with.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. And I totally, the point that you made about the sort of the self-beating, the self-berating, that's, you know, we all have it. And sometimes we don't even notice it because it's been so ingrained for so long. And what's even scarier is, and I can, like, both me and my husband have talked about this a lot, is this sense that sometimes that we don't want to let that go because we feel that, well, how else are we going to be motivated to achieve greatness? You know, I need to be beating myself up. But it's absolute BS because, you know, we can be still highly motivated and do great things without whipping ourselves. You know, we can remove that layer, the layer of the beating ourselves up, and still, and actually even achieve greater things because we have more clarity and focus around the subject. But I totally understand the fear of letting that go, because I used to think it was a brilliant asset. You know, like, oh, you ever beat myself up, I'm going to go out there and be very, very motivated. And you know what? When the more I meditated and the more I was less inclined to, or could step away from that voice, I feel like I've achieved more in the past, you know, couple of years having that kind of attitude than I did before. It really just clouded my judgment. But when it came to emotional eating, and yeah, I was saying that I haven't, it's funny because for many years, this is something that I've been one of my biggest struggles, absolute biggest struggles. And I feel like I tried everything you can imagine to help this problem. And I haven't really talked about it a lot because I think it's only recently that I've just started to feel like I actually have overcome my biggest challenges. So I would say, over 20 years, I've struggled with compulsive eating. It always got worse at work when I was stressed and tired. And whenever I was just in a kind of difficult situation, or even when I was bored, it was kind of like, oh, what should I do? Oh, I'll make some food. I wasn't even hungry. So it's right. Kind of, yeah. And the binging and, you know, it was horrible, a horrible, horrible cycle I was in. And I just remember many times feeling like, how am I ever going to get out of this? I feel like this is who I am. This is going to be the rest of my life now. I'm always going to be stuck with this. I feel like a slave to food. And then the first turning point, I was seeing a therapist, and he recommended, there was some amazing books by a woman. Her name's Janine Roth. And he suggested a book to me called Healing the Hungry Heart. And that was the first book I read of hers. And it really just shifted my understanding of where this this emotional need to eat from came from. I used to think it was because I was greedy and I was just lazy and I had no willpower. So this was the cycle of the berating, you know. Oh, you've got no willpower. Oh, you're a terrible person. You can't control yourself. Oh, and then I'd be like, well, I'm going to eat some more then. It was just this very strange cycle. And it's funny because I read actually most of her books and I've been on her workshops, and a lot of the meditation practices that she includes, these are the kind of things that I'm teaching now. And these are the kind of things that I, you know, I'm so passionate about. And at the moment I'm creating a mindful eating event as well. So I'm really, really excited about that.
Very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And I really, it's again, I went on a silent retreat recently. I've been on a couple, but the mindful eating part of that experience, where it just blew my mind to have silence and to be able to sit and focus on the one thing I was doing. I've never had so much pleasure eating food, and I get a lot of pleasure out of eating food, but this is just like, wow. I, you know, it's really healthy, tasty food. And I, I ate half the plate, and I would never normally do that because I have this fear of wasting food. There's all these, you know, layers of problems. And I could sit there and I could feel my stomach feeling full. I felt my body being nourished. And the meditation practice that I was doing as I was, you know, smelling the food and tasting every single morsel of ingredient, I fully was in that experience. Whereas normally I'd be distracted watching TV or working or chatting to someone. You know, when you go out for dinner, you're busy chatting and before you know it, the food's gone. So it was a real eye opener. And when I came home, I started to incorporate more and more of this. And now I'm really excited about, you know, sharing these tools to help other people, and not just to help them with emotional eating, but just to be like, hey, you know what? Food is great. And you can have an even more exciting experience if you just, you know, calm yourself and be quiet. Rest and digest is the best place that you can actually digest your food and have a healthy relationship with it.
Oh, yeah. I love that. And I had, a breakthrough as well doing a silent retreat. I just did a 2-day retreat and I've been accused of inhaling my food and and people would say, I didn't enjoy food. I can't ever say I had an eating disorder, but I would eat compulsively. I would eat fast. I always have as a kid. I just did what kind of came natural. Mm-hmm. Even though I didn't really have, your average upbringing, I guess. Mm. So we just kind of do what just we're naturally inclined to do. And for me, that was just scarf down my food. Mm. And I always thought, well, maybe I'm just faster than you. Maybe I just enjoy it, but it's just, you know, I'm just enjoying it at a faster pace. I don't know what I was telling myself something like that. Mm. But when I was on the retreat and I would take a bite of food and I would chew it and I would taste the flavors. And then you said something really important, Simone. You said you'd feel your stomach starting to fill up. Mm. You, instead of being focused on the conversation with friends or the TV show or whatever it is, you would feel your body. You'd feel you would taste the flavors. You would feel it, the food working in your body and starting to make you full. And we're so disconnected from that these days. And it was a game changer for me. And now I can sit there and eat half the rice. You know, so I'm in Asia, so people serve you this huge amount of rice. I'll eat half the rice now, whereas before, like you, I would just finish my food. Mm. And I think this is a missing component in Western society. I think people don't get the fact that the way we live is really disconnected from the way we're designed to live. Now, that's not terrible or it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's also, I think we also need to be aware that like this whole civilization modernization experiment, living in cities with cars and honking and lights outside disrupting your circadian rhythms, like you need to understand you've got to go a step above and beyond if you want to be sane and healthy in a fast-paced environment like most of us live. Do you have any thoughts to add on that?
Yeah, no, I just agree. And I feel that when we are in a kind of any other than a relaxed state when we're eating, you know, it just became very apparent to me that when we're in that stress place, our digestive system doesn't perform at its optimum because we were designed not to, you know, when we have that fight or flight situation, our body starts to shut down. So I was starting to realize, especially because I was taking so many supplements to help with all the fertility treatment, you know, Sean, my husband and I, we were working on creating a baby, and I was taking a lot of supplements, and a nutritionist and even my acupuncturist are saying, you know, if you eat in a rush and your digestion isn't working at its optimum, you can eat as much organic food and as many supplements as you want, but you might as well be eating a McDonald's or Burger King, you might as well be eating cardboard because you are not getting the nutrition from the food if your digestion isn't working. And it wasn't. I was like, you know, constipated, or, you know, I remember just my digestion was never great. And I absolutely put it down to eating in a state of a rush or a stress place. It's like my psyche was saying, okay, you're not in a safe place to be digesting this food. Now we want to focus on running away. You know, that's the kind of the operation that was going on in my mind and my body. And once that made sense to me, I was kind of like, okay, this is why I am not, you know, feeling great. This is why I don't have my energy right now. And again, it was only really through eating mindfully, or, you know, and the more meditation that I brought into my life, that I started to feel the difference. So I knew it on an intellectual level, but until I started doing the practices myself and putting the time in, and ultimately you do have to put the time in, make space to do this. But it, you know, I personally know it paid off for me. And I think that it will absolutely make a shift for you, you know, food, everything, you know, emotional, your emotional place. The thing with food is that we, as a society, and actually many people around the world, we don't eat just because we're hungry. We eat for so many other reasons. We eat because emotional. We eat because we're lonely. We eat because, you know, we're tired. We eat because we're bored. And it's like, come on, you know, why, if we only ate when we were hungry and ate really great food, then maybe we wouldn't have so many of these extra problems and health problems. But it's so hard to change. I had a lifetime of it. So it's like, you know, the rewiring can happen, but it's a slow process because you've had a lifetime of being one way, but you can absolutely rewire it.
There's so much important points that you made there. I would ask you, what are some things that a beginner needs to know? Someone who really wants to either try meditation or has tried it, but just can't make a shift. Is there a type of, I know you talked about just, you know, making some space for yourself in the morning, waking up a little bit earlier, getting into a place, a room by yourself if you can, and just sitting there and making it happen. But what are some other steps or some things that someone listening right now can try?
Okay. Well, I would definitely say using an app, or, I mean, if you're fortunate enough to have a meditation center where you live and they do group sessions, this is a brilliant place, you know, a great, great place to start, because again, it gives you the chance to be in that kind of supportive environment. You make the appointment to go, there's like the accountability of it, which is why I actually, you know, there's other meditation forms such as transcendental meditation. Now that is, I do practice that myself as well. And it's just one form of meditation. But the problem I had with that was because, you know, it was a lot of money, and I was like, meditation should be for everyone. But the way I think it works, and one of the elements I think it works, is because of the accountability of it. You know, you invest in this, you pay a lot of money, so you're more likely to kind of stick to it. But if you're just starting out, apps like Insight Timer, you mentioned earlier, and they have, you know, so many different options. They're all free. And it can be a great place to find maybe a 4-minute or 5-minute meditation. And a guide, I do think, is really important, because if you're brand new to it and you feel like you're in the wilderness, like I was, you naturally, like you said, are going to be thinking things like, am I doing this right? Or I can't switch off my thoughts. And that's one of the biggest misconceptions, because we can never switch off our thoughts. And I think that's also one of the things that throws people, because they're like, well, if I can't switch my thoughts off, what's the point of me doing this? And really what you need to sort of understand is you come in at this, you're learning a new skill, not to switch your thoughts off, but almost to lower the volume down. So they're going to be there, they're going to come and go. But what we're building towards is having that sort of distance from them. that's one really important factor that I say to everyone. It's they're not going to disappear. And equally, we're not going to be sitting on a cloud of bliss for 30 minutes or 20 minutes. Meditation isn't about going to this beautiful, relaxing, blissed out state. Yeah, you might have essences and elements of that within your meditation, but don't ever expect to be, you know, that's what you're working towards. Really, you're working towards, especially with a practice like mindfulness, which is, you know, a present moment awareness, and you're bringing a gentle curiosity to it. It's a very, very simple and actually one of the most studied forms of meditation is mindfulness. And I would say that's probably a really, really good one to start with. And you can be, and it can be as simple as sitting in a quiet room. And you could observe your breath. You can literally just watch the flow of the inhale and the outhale. You could also feel inside your body. So it can be feeling your legs against the cushion, feeling your hands against your lap, and just noticing the any sensations in the body. And what that does is it sends a message to the mind that, okay, I'm safe. I'm focusing on my body and I'm coming into this present moment. And what will happen is you'll start to divert. The thought will come in and you'll be like, oh, okay, there's a thought. Just label it thought. Hi, thought. Nice to see you. Okay. And then you bring your awareness back into the body or to watch the breath. So they're two very simple tools that you can use. And there will be a bit of backwards and forwards from, oh, there's thought again, thinking. Now let's go back to my body. And you're kind of like, oh, okay, is this what I'm doing? Just backwards and forwards. And yes, that is what you're doing. And that's designed to start training that awareness. That's a very simple beginner's step to just training your awareness to be able to notice that thoughts are separate.
Yeah, so important. And that it's a little hard to conceptualize for someone, I think, who may not really have the experience of doing that. So the analogy that I think I saw in the Headspace videos, which is what I started with, that 10-day Headspace challenge, which is for free, by the way. You mentioned, I recommend doing it in person. You'll get so much more out of being with an experienced instructor than an app. But Headspace app made the analogy of that you are the blue sky. You're there. You're always there. If the sun's shining, if it's nighttime and the moon's out, or if there is no moon, the sky is still there. And your thoughts are like clouds that pass in front of the sky. And sometimes the clouds are weird shaped or stormy and bring rain and thunder and lightning. And sometimes they're just beautiful and soft and amazing, but you're always there. The thoughts, the feelings are those clouds that pass. And once you start getting that distance, you're going to feel more, at least this is what happened for me, you feel more in control of things because you don't identify that anger that you feel. You realize, oh, there's anger here instead of, I'm angry,
yeah,
right? You're like, oh, there's anger here. Why is there anger? You know, you have that space to, I guess, realize that, okay, here's an emotion that's hopping up.
Yeah.
But you aren't that emotion. Otherwise, you'd be angry 24/7, but you're not. Or you'd be happy 24/7, and you're not. So there's something more to it. So do you have anything to follow up there?
Yeah, no. It's a great analogy. And I love any sort of visuals like that. And it just sparked to mind because Jon Kabat-Zinn also says about, he uses this great line. He's like, you know, well, we can't stop the waves. You know, like the waves are our thoughts and emotions and the kind of the overwhelming feelings. You can't stop the waves, but you can learn to surf them. So it's kind of like
that.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's like, oh, okay. So, I mean, and you're right. It's what I always say in my classes is the best way that we can approach whenever we're sitting in the room, or you know, taking it into your daily life, is this feeling or this attitude of curiosity. So it's imagining yourself as, you know, a kind of a little detective. And when these feelings come along, instead of having this, you know, aversion to them, because which is the natural feeling, is like, get this away from me. I don't want to feel this pain. Or, you know, or clinging to something that feels nice, which is that's our kind of what we're drawn to. If we start to look at them as, where is this coming from in my body? And, you know, if it had a shape, what would that shape look like? And what you start to do is you start to see it as something that isn't threatening and that isn't overwhelming. Something, and again, that perception allows you to get some distance from it. It starts to shift, like you said, from the right-hand side of the brain over to the left, which is kind of, it just allows it to be, you know, a less of a kind of, what's the word? You go from a resistant feeling to a more of an allowed view, allow it to be there. So that is a really important part of the mindfulness and meditation process, you know, just to develop that attitude of curiosity. It shifts a lot when you see it like that.
It's a superpower, damn it.
Yeah.
Want to be a super person, start meditating.
Yeah, why not?
but it's so true. If everybody did meditate, it would change the way people go through their lives, whether they react with anger or emotion, or feel like, if you've ever said, oh yeah, I know what to do, but I just can't help myself. Well, it gives you a superpower over yourself.
Yes.
And you start to realize that, oh, well, this is where it's coming from. You start to disidentify. I don't even know if that's a word, but you stop identifying with your emotions and you put yourself back in the driver's seat while lowering your stress levels and lengthening your telomeres and changing your brain. It's just really, I think a couple of things to go on about here that I think are important are that a lot of people will get turned off from meditation for two reasons, I think, two big reasons. Number one, people talk about meditation as a way to reduce stress. And it's like, that's weak because I already exercise. Exercise reduces stress. But I never, and I've done all manner of crazy things, from martial arts to just all types of wild, crazy experiences with exercise. And meditation, not one of those experiences doing exercise or sports or something exciting gave me the experience that meditation did. Mm. The other thing that I think turns a lot of people off are the people who talk and about meditation in a way using that flowery language that doesn't resonate with people. And that really annoys me, because if I wanted to get you to start meditating, I wouldn't say, well, you have to, you know, experience shamatha and rotate your chakras. It's like, that doesn't connect with your average the people who need to meditate. It doesn't connect with them. So could you talk about, do you have any thoughts about those two things? The idea that meditation is just a way to reduce stress, and why would I do that when I can just, you know, get a massage or exercise? And then the types of terminology that some of the more spiritual people use about meditation that turns a lot of people off.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I totally get it. You know, I'm from Liverpool, and where I grew up, I don't think I'd even heard of meditation. You know, it was something that was very new to me when it was only when I really started practicing yoga and did my yoga teacher training. And that was when I was like, you know, mid to late 20s. So yes, the flowery language and the kind of the cliche, you know, the sort of like slow talking and all this, it can feel a bit cringy. And I get it because I felt that myself. And it was really, I suppose, you know, I guess it was the science side of stuff that was very appealing to me. And I think, you know, knowing companies like Google and Apple and, you know, all these big companies have invested so much money into their own mindfulness programs. They incorporate this into their business because they know it's going to make people happier, healthier, and most importantly for them, more productive. So they've taken the approach and gone into the mindfulness side of things that is more science-based. It doesn't necessarily, you know, you do not have to be spiritual to practice mindfulness. Mindfulness is one of the most simple forms of meditation. If that does put you off, explore meditations that like the mindfulness practices. And the thing about the stress, yes, that is the kind of the number one thing we hear. It reduces stress, you know, it reduces stress and you know, with the chemical balance of the brain and the, you know, they've also measured increases your dopamine levels and it can increase your serotonin. So yes, exercise does that as well. But with meditation, it can give you so much more. For me, what I loved about things like the gratitude practice was that, and UCLA do a lot of research on this, is that, you know, the whole rewiring of the brain, the whole neurons fire together. So they've actually seen a whole change in the chemistry of the brain when practicing a meditation. It's called a gratitude meditation. And there's other types as well that do the same thing, but they can literally see the change in the makeup of the brain because it's starting to bring in more positive feelings and more appreciative feelings of your memories. So because of the negativity bias and where the mind loves to find problems, that's it's like, you know, one job and it finds it so easy to do that. We have to work hard to fight against that. Well, I probably shouldn't use the word fight, but we have to work hard to change that and bring in more elements of joy or positivity because it's not naturally designed to do that. It wants to find the problems. Dr. Rick Hansen, he also writes a lot of great books. He's a neuroscientist. Sorry if I got that wrong. But he's a very smart man and he knows all about the brain. And he wrote a book called The Buddha's Brain. And he is, you know, all about he's done a lot of research on what happens to our bodies and our minds when we meditate. So if that's something that you're interested in, I would go to the likes of him, his books, and he does a great TED talk as well, just breaking down what actually happens to us when we meditate. Sorry, was there another question? I can't remember what you wanted.
Oh, no. That was amazing. Yeah, that was amazing. I'll have to look up that TED Talk. I read an article by him recently, and Buddha's Brain.
Yeah.
So, yeah, fantastic information, and definitely want to check out that book.
Yeah, talking about Google, there's the Chade Meng Tan, who created the mindfulness program there. He has a book called Search Inside Yourself. Again, it has some really great, so if you're interested in using mindfulness in a sort of more productive career place, this is a very, very brilliant book to sort of help in that area.
Yeah, excellent. So you've got a couple of great book recommendations there. I would say, don't read about it first, read about it later. Just do it.
Yes.
Please.
Yes. Yeah. Look, yeah, that is number one. Like our teachers, when we did our 400-hour teacher training course, one of the first things they said to us was, you know, we are here. We're here to guide you. We're here to point you in the direction, but dismiss everything you read and dismiss everything you learn from us, because only when you sit and practice and have your own experiences, that is when you're really going to start learning. So sometimes education and books and everything, you know, they're useful, but they can actually stop us from really deeply having truth and gaining truth and not and genuine wisdom. So always keep that in mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for following up there, because I have a podcast and I tell people stop listening to podcasts and go do something.
Please
go do something. It's about the experience. And so, yeah, I'm glad we're on the same page there.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Simone, I could easily talk with you for another hour about this. Today was just people have been asking me about a meditation episode. I'm so happy with what we've done here. I think it's shutting it down now and then having you come back on and we can go a bit deeper into some other things that we didn't have a chance to go into today. But I just want to thank you so much. I've learned a lot today, and it's so cool that we connected, and I didn't know any of this about you, and and here you are, just such a knowledgeable meditation teacher, helping people with this. And thanks so much for coming on today and sharing your time and your wisdom with us.
Oh, thank you, Ted. It's been a pleasure. And, you know, I'm still learning. I'm loving everything that I do in this new world. I'm learning so much about. So it's been a pleasure to talk about it with you and catch up.
Yeah, so much fun. Well, listen, Simone has some information, some audios on meditation. If you want to learn more about what she does, especially if you're in LA and you want to stop by The Den, which is where she teaches meditation, or you want to get some, you want to learn more about what she's up to, go to SimoneTai.com. That's SimoneTai.com. SimoneTai.com. And you can find her on Instagram as well at Simone Tai Meditates. So those are the two places. Is there anywhere else someone should go to connect with you?
Well, they're my favorites at the moment. So we'll stick with those two.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I'm definitely contactable via both those places. I'd love to hear from you.
Great. So if you enjoy this conversation, give her a mention on Instagram. And make sure you tag me as well if you're Instagram savvy, and let us know that you enjoyed the episode and learned something. And most importantly, that you actually took action on what you heard.
Yeah, go out there and do it.
So awesome, Simone. Thanks so much. It's been great catching up, and I can't wait till we do this again. I definitely want to do this again soon.
I'd love to. Thank you, Ted.
That wraps up another episode of the Legendary Life Podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, and I hope you learned a lot about meditation and its benefits and why it goes beyond just stress reduction or anything like that. Meditation is such a powerful, game-changing method, technique, strategy, way to take your life to the next level that you simply can't get from taking supplements, exercise, nutrition. Believe me, I've been in that for longer. I've been into that for 20 years professionally, and I've tried so many things in so many sports, but meditation, if we're talking about stress reduction, if we're talking, I was about to say something more spiritual, but I want to keep it high level and not get too deep here. But I would even say, even at a spiritual level, it can help you. So if you've been struggling with these things, and also on a scientific level, for those of you who are probably more comfortable with that type of talk, it can rewire your brain. This isn't new age nonsense, pseudo-scientific nonsense. This has been proven by science. So this is something that I want you to explore. And even if you have some trouble meditating, keep trying. And also, one thing that Simone forgot to mention is that if you go to her website, SimoneTai.com, that's SimoneTai.com, SimoneTai.com, she has some beginner meditations there that you can listen to. And of course, if you want to connect with her on Instagram, Simone Tai Meditates is her handle. And of course, if you got a lot out of today's episode and you know someone could benefit, you know someone's been trying to meditate, trying to wrap their head around meditation, trying to get into it, but really struggling with it, and you feel like this could help them, please share this show with them so that they can benefit as well. Sharing a show is the highest compliment you can pay me, and so much gratitude for you when you do that. So thank you so much for those of you who have been sharing the shows and tagging me on social media. Really, really appreciate that. And of course, if this is your first time listening and if you want to hear more, make sure you hit that subscribe button wherever you listen to podcasts so that every time one of my episodes goes live, you'll be the first to know. So that's all I've got. That's my big takeaway from today. I hope you learned a lot about meditation. I hope you take the challenge and start to practice it more. I wish you an amazing week, and I'll speak to you soon.